In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I discuss when you should ask your customers for credit cards. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 179. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, sir?
As you know, MicroConf is just a couple of weeks away. I do want to send out a congratulations to Brian Marble and Eric Nagel. Each of them won free tickets to MicroConf, compliments of Constant Contact and Balsamic, respectively. They got an email from our mailing list at startupsforrestofus.com and entered into those contests and were selected as the winners. So they get a free ticket to MicroConf. And if you're interested in hearing other things about some of the stuff that Rob and I are working on or other things in the startup community, then head on over to startupsforrestofus.com and you can sign up for the newsletter there.
I had a couple notes about last week's episode, some other thoughts. One is that Rival Fox, which they wrote the blog post that we based the episode on, they published a follow-up to that. We'll have a link to that in the show notes, but you can also go to Rival Fox's blog and hear about that. The other part is we had a question about how to manage bug tracking and how to modify existing features, even if you're a developer and you don't want to modify those features. And when I brought that up to Derek, my lead developer, he said, write tests. Like, spend the extra 20% of your time and write tests. The more test coverage you have, the more confidence you can have to modify existing features. And if you're a founder and you're not the actual developer, then give your developers that extra time to be able to write tests. And that's something I've realized with Drip. We have a luxury that we don't have with Hittail, because Drip has extensive test coverage and Hittail does not. And so there's a little more trepidation to go in and modify the guts of the code because, you know, you always run the risk of breaking something.
That's something that has completely slipped my mind as well. I remember a while back, I was writing some stuff inside of the core of AutoShark, and I was changing how the engine itself was working to make it more efficient. And then I made a bunch of changes to it, and then I ran through my suite of unit tests, which runs like a couple of hundred tests on like the core of it, core auditing engine. And there were a bunch of them that passed, but then there was this whole slew of them that failed that it was something really small, some edge case that I hadn't thought of while I was implementing the fix or the update. And it's just like all these things failed that I probably would not have noticed or recognized until it got out in the field and it was too late. So yeah, definitely those unit tests can certainly save you when you've got things that are very intricate or complicated that are interacting between each other.
Absolutely. And the other benefit is that, you know, when you do find a bug in production, then you go into your code, you fix it, and then you write a test that ensures that that bug will never get into production again. And so over time, you know, you can always discover new bugs as you're introducing new code, but all that existing code is, it's just locked down and you become so much more confident. You can make grand sweeping changes and actually feel okay about them because, like you said, you don't have to test every nook and cranny because your tests handle the bulk of that for you. They obviously don't handle 100% of it, but they handle quite a bit of it.
Hey, I also wanted to point out, if anyone follows Sarah Hatter and her team over at CoSupport, they just launched a new book called The Customer Support Handbook. And they started selling it, I think, back in December. And they were basically selling pre-release copies of it that came bundled with like a basket and all these atomic fireballs and various other things. But you can go out to Amazon right now and get it. And we'll link that up in the show notes. I kind of glanced through it yesterday when I got my copy of it. It looks pretty detailed so far. I think that Sarah's got a really good handle on customer support. And if you don't know who she is, she handled the customer support for 37 Signals for a long time before she kind of struck out on her own and created the company CoSupport.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed the launch. I'm glad you pointed it out. I'm going to be buying the Kindle version. It looks like it's only $8 on Amazon. It's kind of a no-brainer. One other update for me on Drip specifically. We are hopefully only 2 weeks out from having this email automation. It's like marketing automation, but it's specifically with email in place in Drip. And from what I can tell and from what both existing customers and some prospects, I think it's going to open us up into a pretty broad market, and it's a hungry market. Marketing automation's kind of a new thing. I mean, it's not super new. Infusionsoft's been around for several years, but it's really starting to hit its stride, and I feel like people are getting into it more. Even, you know, folks who own SaaS apps or the info marketers who used to just have a single list are now moving people between multiple lists based on that user's behavior. And frankly, there are some tools out there that do it, but everyone who uses them tells me that they suck. It's kind of like, you know, when everybody uses QuickBooks, but everybody hates it. That's what I'm hearing about tools like Infusionsoft and I guess Marketo is good, but it's like a couple grand a month or something. I mean, it's just, it is a space that I think could be ripe for some disruption. So I'm excited to get that out and to basically do a pretty big marketing push into that market, because it really does change the value proposition of Drip.
Let me get this straight, because I haven't asked you about this before, but by email automation, you essentially mean that there are triggers that the user can kind of trip over and trigger inside of Drip. So let's say I run AutoShark and somebody goes into AutoShark and does something, whatever that something is. Maybe they, not just signing up for a trial, but it could be something like they set up their first system, for example, yep, to be audited. And then that fires a callback into Drip, and Drip will send them an email that you guys monitor all of the interactions between the user in that email and send it out and figure out whether they actually read it or not and can do follow-ups and things like that.
That's exactly right. And okay, so it can be triggered based on, you know, obviously signing up for a trial would be a good one. You could put your whole trial sequence inside Drip, and it has, we use liquid templating, so you can have if then. So if they've done this and haven't done that, you can, you know, modify the text in the email, or you can just have a fairly standard template. If they convert to paid, then you can automatically move them into paid customer list or the, you know, the current customer list. And then, like you said, as they use a new feature, or if they don't log in for X amount of days, or if they, you know, or a month or whatever, there's just all these behavioral things that can be done in an app. Now, there's also stuff on the marketing side where if they click this particular link in an email, you can tag them. You know, they click an SEO link, it brings them to a blog post that talks about SEO. You can tag that person, they're interested in SEO. And so you can then say, when they get done with their current sequence, move them to my other sequence, my SEO sequence. And then when they get done with that, funnel them back into the main sequence. So there's both a marketing angle to it, and there's also like an in-app, more of a SaaS app type model behind it. So I'm going to see, I'm interested to find out which one of those is bigger, because I know people doing both of those sides of it, but without, you know, actually getting into it and starting to market all, I won't know which of those markets is bigger and hungrier for this type of automation.
That's cool. Sounds really neat. Well, as you said in the intro, today we're going to be talking about when to ask your customers for credit cards. This question gets asked to us quite a bit, so I thought that we'd do a whole episode on the topic and talk about some of the pros and cons of some of the different approaches. And I think one of the big things that we get is, why do we recommend asking for credit cards up front when some of the data that's floated around out there, if you look at the data itself, it kind of clearly shows that the opposite is actually more profitable.
I think what we're going to see today is the short answer to this question is you should ask for credit cards up front. But it's not like a 90-10 situation where 90% of the time you should ask for credit cards up front and 10% you shouldn't. I'd say it's more like a 60-40 or a 65-45, where when you hit these certain milestones, this critical mass, when you have enough time to do certain things, then switching to no credit card totally makes sense. But without having an entire episode to expound upon that, that's always been the answer that I've given folks: when in doubt, ask for credit card up front. And so I'm excited to dive into this topic, honestly, because we're going to be able to give it, you know, a lot more talking through.
So I think we'll start into some of the pros to asking for a credit card as part of the sign-up process, and then we'll talk about some of the cons of that, and then we'll talk about asking people for credit cards after they've started their trial. To begin with, some of the pros of asking them for a credit card as part of the sign-up process is that theoretically it filters out some of the people who are not serious. And the idea here is, if you ask somebody for a credit card, then they must be serious about it because they're clearly willing to pay for it. I think that's a good qualifier, but I also think that it's not necessarily true. It's not an absolute rule that says, hey, if somebody gives me their credit card, then they're absolutely willing to pay for it. And that's totally not true, because in most people's marketing materials, it typically says something along the lines of 30-day money-back guarantee or whatever the number of days is. You're saying that you'll give them a refund. The problem with that is that they see those things, and to them, there's really virtually no risk for them to put their credit card in. And the fact of the matter is that if they do put their credit card in, they can always come back later. And if you do charge them, they could do a chargeback. Just thinking that that filters out all the non-serious people is just not necessarily correct.
Yeah, I think I see it the other way. In Drip, I have a two-step sign-up process. The first step doesn't mention credit card. You enter your email and password, and then the second step asks for credit card. So I have information on people who aren't entering that card. So I can see who gets through, and I can see who doesn't enter their card. And far and away, the people who don't enter credit cards are way, way less qualified. And I can tell because I have the URL that they enter, and I have their email address, right? So I can tell if it's a business address, and then I can tell what the URL is. And by and large, the people who are skipping out and not entering that credit card in the second step, not starting the trial, either have a fake URL, they have a URL that's like a default WordPress install, they have some type of I don't know, like a micro niche site that is never going to work for drip anyways. Like, it's not going to be worth the money to pay for it. They just have 404s, or they have a URL that doesn't even have a site up. It's not 100%, but I would say it's maybe 80%+ of those people. So for me, through that experience, and my intuition says that you will get more qualified people. And then from that experience, that's kind of the data point that I've used.
I pointed out that it's not necessarily true, because I think that there's the inclination for people to believe that if I ask for a credit card, then I'm only going to get people who are well qualified. And I just want to point out that there are going to be people who come through there that are not.
That's definitely true. Also from experience. Yeah. Yep.
So the second part is that, you know, you don't have to follow up and ask them for a credit card. I mean, if they've signed up, they've put in their credit card information, you don't have to follow up with them later. And that's, in some ways, that's a benefit to you, but it's not necessarily a benefit to the customer, because they do have to enter in their credit card up front. So if you're basically making it so that they have to kind of stop what they're doing if they wanted to go through the sign-up process, and they're not able to just do the sign-up process. I've read various blog posts from people who have said flat out, I didn't sign up for such and such service because my wallet was upstairs and I would have had to go upstairs to go get my credit card, and then I just never went back to it. So I think that lowering that barrier of entry can certainly help you, but clearly one of the benefits of asking for it as part of the sign-up process is you don't have to ask for it later. You don't have to follow up with them.
And I'll add 2 points to this. The first is, if you ask for a credit card up front, you should always email every customer before their trial expires and let them know their card is going to be charged in typically 3 days is the rule I use. This is not a take the credit card and then drop out of sight and try to be forgotten. That's not how we grow apps. That's not how you build a successful app. You definitely need to touch base with folks before they're charged, and then every month when they're charged, you send them a receipt and you offer refunds if people want to cancel at that point. So that's the first thing. The second part is, if you do implement a two-step signup process where you get someone's email and their chosen password the first step and then credit card the second, that gives you an opportunity that if someone doesn't complete the process, that you can feasibly ping them, you know, a day later and say, hey, I noticed you didn't sign up. Was it the credit card? Did you not have your wallet or something like that? Because I've actually had a drip customer tell me the exact same thing. And I do this. Like, we have a drip sequence people are subscribed to. It's only one email long. It basically just touches base and says, hey, you didn't sign up with your card. You know, did you need assistance or did you just forget or whatever? But that then converts a few more of those people who, like you said, their wallet was upstairs and maybe this time their wallet isn't upstairs. So that's a way to kind of get around that not having credit card on hand objection.
I don't think that's terribly common to have that two-step process. I mean, I've signed up for a lot of services over the past couple of years, and there's not very many that have that two-step process for where you're creating your account, you put enter in your email address and password and maybe a URL or something like that, and then on the next page, you ask them for credit card information. I don't see that terribly often. So I think that's definitely a good takeaway for people who are listening to this.
I haven't seen it very much either, and it's been quite successful with us at Drip.
The third benefit to having a credit card as part of the sign-up process is you get a higher trial to paid conversion rates. And if you go back and look at the Totango SaaS report, which we'll link to as part of the show notes, you look at that and it pretty clearly illustrates that the people who come in and enter in their credit card information up front typically have a higher trial to paid conversion rate.
This is a little bit of a vanity metric. Obviously, someone paying you money is not a vanity metric, but if you're not looking then down the line that I think we're going to get into here pretty soon of talking about how many people churn out over the next few months, you're not looking at the full picture. This would be kind of a weak argument if I were to say, well, the only reason you should do it is because higher trial to paid, because if you don't retain people for very long and everybody cancels in the first month, then obviously that's not ultimately the best thing to do.
So let's talk about some of the downsides of asking for the credit card up front. Obviously, the first one is to get lower sign-up rates. Again, that's something that you kind of weigh that with the people who are signing up. I mean, do you want a lot of people who are not very well qualified, or do you want a few people who are very well qualified? And so that's something that you have to kind of balance out there.
Let's talk a few numbers. We do have this Totango report that we'll link up. They give some ranges and they're pretty accurate as far as my experience has been. And they basically say, if you're asking for credit card up front, you tend to be around a 2% visitor to trial signup. And I've seen 1 to 2%. As a general rule for SaaS. Now, with no credit card required, they have 10% as their kind of general ballpark. And so it's about a 5x difference, right? It's about 5 times more trials. Or as you said, I guess you said lower signup rate. So it's about 1/5 of the trials coming through your funnel if you're asking for a credit card.
And this is on page 8 of that report. The next thing is that you'll tend to not engage with customers as much because you already have their payment details. And what happens is that you have stopped trying to earn their business. So you've got this paywall up in front of your app. And in order to get into your app, you basically force them to give you their credit card information. And then once you've got it, what I've seen is a tendency to stop doing marketing to those people, to stop trying to continue to sell them on the product because they've already bought it. So I think the mentality is really, well, they've already purchased it. Why do I need to keep selling them on it? And I think the reason for that is because you want to make sure that they follow through and don't do a chargeback, that they don't cancel, that they're still going to be a customer after 30, 60, 90 days, because you want them to get into your system and stay there. I mean, the lifetime value of that customer is going to increase over time. So you want to do whatever it takes to make sure that they stay there for a long period of time.
Yeah, I think this is a common mistake. I think you're right. It's a crutch to fall back on the fact that you've asked for a credit card to assume that the people are then going to just onboard themselves. You still have to spend a lot of time getting someone using the app, getting value out of the app, so that when they get that 3-day prior to charge email, that they do in fact want to stick around and that they don't cancel right away. Now, at the same time, it tends to be easier to get people who have entered their credit card to get onboarded because they are a little more qualified. They have a slightly more invested because they have given you credit card details, so they know that if they don't go get onboarded, that they need to remember to cancel and that kind of stuff. So there's a balance here, but I think it's a no-brainer that if you are asking for a credit card or not, that you still have to spend the time to engage your customers during their trial, or else you're gonna lose them, whether you have their credit card or not.
And the next downsides of asking for the credit card up front are you end up with a lower paid retention rate after 90 days and a lower end-to-end conversion rate. And again, this goes back to the Totango report. And these are in relation to asking for a credit card. So, and the numbers that they show are that after 90 days, the retained paid customers after that 90 days is 60% with a credit card required, but it's 80% if you do not require a credit card. And then on the end-to-end conversions, it's 0.6% if you require a credit card and 1.2% if you do not require a credit card.
Right. So they're saying you convert twice as many people with no credit card. You know, you have to manage 5 times the number of trials, but you convert twice as many with these numbers. These numbers vary in both directions, both the credit card and credit card not required. So it truly does depend on your product and how well you're able to handle onboarding and how engaged you are and how much you've optimized that funnel. A broad swath across all the companies that Totango studied certainly indicates that end-to-end conversion rates with credit card are lower.
So let's talk a little bit about asking for credit cards after somebody has created their account and started their trial. One of the first things that you'll see is that you get significantly higher sign-up rates. And the Totango report shows that it's about 5 times what it is as if you were to ask for credit cards up front.
I think it's at least 5 times. You know, I've seen apps where they might get a 1% before credit card, and they can get well up over 10% without credit card. So 5, in my experience, has been the low end, and I could easily see 10 or 15x more trials, which is, you know, can be a good thing. If you can handle that volume, it's actually, you can optimize stuff a lot quicker if you're getting that many trials, right? Because you just have so much more volume coming through your funnel.
Well, I think that's something else to point out is that just because you have a lot more people coming through your funnel, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have the time to follow up on them. And I think one of the key things that a lot of this data doesn't necessarily tell you is that you really need to be able to have the resources behind you to follow up with these people if you're not requiring a credit card. If you got, and this kind of assumes that you have 10,000 visitors a month to your website, and these are the approximate numbers that it's going to shake out to, but that comes out to 1,000 trials a month. And 1,000 trials a month is a lot more difficult to manage than 200, say.
And you're jumping ahead to one of the cons, but the point is it's the downside of the pro that we're discussing. At 1,000 trials a month, if you have any kind of manual setup or any kind of code they need to install or any step that might require assistance, you are going to need like a half-time or a full-time support person just to help with onboarding if you're driving that many trials. It's night and day. I mean, I think it's 5 times the amount of support than the asking for credit card route. And so that's where if you're a company and you have 5 or 10 people, you can hire a full-time support person, then yes, moving towards not asking for credit card is something I would recommend at least testing. But if you're a solopreneur and you're working on a SaaS app on the side, nights and weekends, you launch it and you're just trying to scramble and get enough money to quit your job, not asking for a credit card can be kind of a real danger zone because you just don't have the bandwidth to be able to onboard and engage with the volume of trials that you're going to get.
I think one of the weird things about this report is that it shows that when you're not asking for a credit card, the number of free trials to paid users is significantly lower than if you were asking for a credit card. But then the number of those people who end up paying you for more than 90 days is about 20% higher. It's 80% versus 60% for a credit card. I don't see anything in here that kind of explains why that is. That's one thing that it's a question mark to me.
Yeah, I think that it's that people are making a very deliberate choice to convert to paying customer. And it's not that people who enter their credit card up front and then get the 3-day email and see it and, you know, they kind of say, well, I'm going to keep using it. I'm not onboarded yet, but I'll just stick around for a month or two. I mean, I've done this several times. Then you get 2 or 3 months down the line, your card's been charged and you eventually cancel. I think that's what's happening with those folks. Whereas on the other side, where you're 20 days into a trial and it's kind of like, hey, have you gotten value out of this? If so, enter your card and, you know, we'll move you into paid account. That's a very deliberate decision. And I think those folks don't enter their card unless they've onboarded and gotten value out of the app. And by that time, they're just much more likely to stick around. So you're right. It doesn't say that in the report. That's kind of my theory on why the retention rates are dramatically higher. It's a very stark difference. And that leads to the other two pros you were going to mention, which is that you have a higher paid retention rate after 90 days not asking for a credit card, and that, you know, at least according to this report and their study, that you have a higher end-to-end conversion rate. Now, the tough part is if you're doing this on your own, I mean, I would always recommend to test, right? You got to test both approaches. It's pretty complicated to do so. It's not like setting up a Google split test. There's a lot of numbers and a lot of things you have to look at over an extended period of time. And so this is not something that I would recommend that if you're doing it on the side, you're more of an entry-level entrepreneur or you've just launched, it's like this is a complex beast and you can easily look at the wrong metrics or not look at it over a long enough period of time and make a mistake in judgment. And that's, again, why the short answer I have is always get the pre-qualified people, ask for credit card up front. But the longer answer is, as you get more advanced, you can do something like this. Very similar, you know how I talked about a freemium being the samurai sword, right? That if you don't know what you're doing, you can cut your arm off, but a master can do amazing things with it. I kind of feel like this credit card debate is the same way. When you're getting started, the easy way is to ask, and then, you know, down the line, kind of you can test and or you know what you're doing more and you know more about your value prop, and you're just able to encourage people who haven't given you a credit card to enter that credit card. You're onboarding so much better and you just have a lot more to lend to optimizing that process.
I guess the way I see it is you don't necessarily understand or fully comprehend what it is that's resonating with your audience yet.
Yep.
So it's not that you don't know what you're doing. It's just you don't know what your audience is thinking yet.
That's right.
So and by asking for the credit cards up front, you kind of filter it down to the people who really need it and make the decision up front. Hey, I know that I need this and these guys supply it, so I'm going to pay for it. And then you talk to those people. And then eventually down the road, when you get more resources available to you, then you can kind of convert over.
That's right. Yeah, that phrase, you don't know what you're doing yet. I use that for myself when I'm still learning about how to market an app, right? Until I find that place where I can scale it and I'm still in that learning phase, right? So it doesn't mean you're a beginner versus advanced. It just means you're still trying to figure out that value proposition that resonates with folks.
I think the biggest issue with not asking for the credit card is that you need to follow up with people a lot and you need to optimize that. But you have to have a lot of information from your customers in order to be able to do it effectively, because you can create email sequences and follow-ups and all these other things. But if you don't have the resources to call people back and ask them questions or ask them why they haven't done something, then it doesn't matter. That's going to drop your ability to convert people from a free trial into a paid conversion.
Yeah, if you look at the people who are not asking for a credit card and having success with it, and make sure that last part is there, because a lot of people are not having success with it and don't know any better. But if you look at a KISS metrics, but if you see someone who's making it work, they have invested hundreds of hours into making that work, because you have to optimize this part of the follow-up sequence. You can't just dump someone in and expect them to get started. You need to either be making phone calls, you need an expertly written email trial sequence, you need a lot of onboarding in the app. there's a lot that goes into this that is harder here than it is if you ask for credit card up front. And so if you don't have weeks worth of time to not only put out a V1.0, but then to watch how that works and measure it in terms of your onboarding and your trial emails and that whole process, then this is where it can be a danger zone. He's that phrase again. If you don't know what you're doing yet, then this is a lot harder than it looks to actually make these numbers work the way that Tatango shows.
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I heard at the Business of Software conference a few years ago was there was a roundtable discussion, and there were a bunch of people from some fairly large companies there, and one of the people was there from Redgate, and he flat out said that as part of their trial sequence and stuff, they basically ask people for some information about themselves, like their email address and phone number and things like that. And what they started doing was they started calling people 20, 30 days after they downloaded a trial. And what they found was, after doing the measurements and stuff, was that the average purchase price of somebody that they called was something like 60 or 70% higher than it was that if they did not call. It was enough that, like, you look at that and say, oh, well, what's 60 to 70%? It was something, the difference in actual numbers was something like $1,300 to $2,400 or $2,500 or something like that. So the cost of them not making that call was something like over $1,000. And they were consciously choosing to not make that call. And they're just like, we don't know why we're not doing this. We just don't have the ability to call, and we're not consciously choosing to call those people. And they're making enough money that it doesn't necessarily matter to them, but they could theoretically have been a lot more successful if they were calling those people. And you would think that a company their size would be able to afford to hire people to just go out and call people. And it was just not something that they were doing at the time.
I think you've made a good point there, that if a company like that can't make this work without credit card, and that they aren't doing the right steps to actually get this 1.2% conversion rate that Tatango's report talks about, it shows you that it's difficult. It's not impossible for a small shop to do it, but if you're one person, two people, three people, it is going to be a challenge, and you're really going to have to know what you're doing and be willing to invest a lot of time in it until you see the numbers grow. It's not something you can just set one time and forget.
Yeah, I think the other thing that brings out is that you can't really treat those free trials as if they were just a black box. I mean, you really need to engage with your customers, and that makes a huge difference in whether or not they cancel or whether they fork over their credit card and actually pay for the service. I mean, the other side of that is, you know, how quickly they realize the value versus when they perceive the value of the product makes a huge difference as well. So if you put together this great marketing story for them and they look at that and they say, oh yeah, I see the value in that, here's my credit card information. But if they don't actually see the value of that, then, and maybe it takes 30, 40, 50 days for them to see the value, that makes a big difference as well. And I think, Rob, you've kind of talked a little bit around this in the past by discussing how I think it was the length of your free trial for, I believe it was Hittail, you dropped it from like 28 days to 14 days or 21, something along those lines.
Yeah, when I first acquired Hittail, the trial was 60 days long, and I immediately moved it to 30. And then I moved it to 21 after maybe 6 months of testing. And that allows you to iterate faster. And it also, frankly, we had improved the product. And so people got value out of it sooner. And the more you learn about how quickly people get value out of it, the shorter you can make that trial. Having a 7-day trial is not a bad thing. If you give people value in the first few hours, having a 24-hour trial or no trial, you know, charge them up front and then refund them. And that's how a lot of web hosts do it. Because as soon as you have a web hosting account, you have space on their server, you're getting value out of it. And to be honest, I'm actually considering either going with no credit card with Hittail just as a test, or also testing, you know, asking for a charge up front. Because as soon as you get into Hittail now, there's no tracking code and there's no wait anymore. Right when you get in, you link it up to your Google Webmaster Tools account, boom, you get suggestions right away within minutes of being in. So the length of time until that awesome experience, that literally went from 15, 16 days that a lot of our customers was taking and down to about 5 minutes. And so realistically, my whole onboarding flow should change. I can take better advantage of that, frankly. So there's a lot of options here. And I think that the more data you have and the more that you've seen your customers get value out of it, the more behavior you've been able to witness, it just gives you more arrows in your quiver in order to test new things.
You know, something else that we haven't really talked about yet is that the Tatango report really differentiates in three different categories, not just two. The first one is credit card required up front. Second one is credit card not required up front. And then they have this third category where what they call it is best-in-class SaaS leaders. And if you look at that category, it's essentially people who don't really fall inside those numbers. They're doing significantly better than all of the other people in there. So you took, maybe they're looking at the top 5 or 10% of the SaaS companies that are feeding data into their system and saying, well, what are these guys doing? How are they doing so much better than everyone else? And it's interesting because they point out that one of the things that those best-in-class people do is they don't restrict that top of the funnel. They don't ask for a credit card up front. Which kind of makes sense because we've kind of talked about that. But the other thing that they have to do is they have to monitor those trial users. And in any group of trial customers, there's going to be some people who are more inclined to buy from you just because of the fact that whether it's who you are or whether they really need the product. Again, it's those people who probably would have given you their credit card up front if you'd asked for it. But by following up with those people and actively looking for them in their metrics and say, oh, well, you know, Sally joined today and she's spent 2 hours inside of our application. So clearly she needs this. So let's follow up with her today. Versus Joe, who signs up and then doesn't log in for 4 days. And he's probably not nearly as well qualified.
I'd also be really interested to see the worst in class and what they're doing differently. I think that'd be really educational. But this is cool to see. You know, they say the best in class companies have that large top of funnel. They don't ask for credit card. Says they have awesome content. They do a lot of inbound marketing. They obviously have a higher touch approach to sales because they're doing lead scoring and they're nurturing those trials and they're focusing on the people who are getting value out of it or who feasibly could. And, you know, as we've said, that does definitely take more effort than some people have at this point in their product.
And they're also actively reaching out to people who are essentially at-risk customers. I remember Dharmesh Shah at the Business of Software conference had said flat out that they have the CHIs, the Customer Happiness Index, and they can essentially predict when somebody is going to cancel. And they were using that to identify those people and in advance of them canceling would call them up and say, hey, we just want to know what we can do to help. But he basically said they target those people and try to make sure that they have everything that they need so that they don't cancel.
Yep. And the Tatango report says proactively reach out to at-risk customers to offer help. And so that's not just an automated email follow-up sequence. That means either manually emailing someone or better yet, getting on the phone with them. And that's what these best-in-class companies are doing. And I think that's the part that people skip over when they read this report or when they hear, oh, I shouldn't ask for credit card, is that, you know, there is some effort here. Well worth it if you're at scale, because the numbers are very different. It's a whole other side of the business that you would definitely need to focus on if you want to make it work that way.
Yeah, and I think that that's probably where a lot of the confusion maybe comes from, where we tend to recommend, hey, ask for a credit card up front unless there's very specific reasons that you have for not doing so. And it's because all of that active follow-up, you know, the proactively reaching out to people who are at risk and nurturing those leads as they come in. When you have so many people who are coming in, it's hard to follow up with all of them. And again, you don't necessarily know your marketing message up front. So those things make it difficult to manage that large number of people versus asking for the credit card up front, trying to do your best to kind of pre-qualify people and, you know, using that credit card and then following up with that smaller group of people till you get to that scale. I heard a podcast had Ruben Gomez on there and he said he was actively testing without a credit card now in order for him to iterate faster. And it was a very interesting podcast. If I find it, I'll link it up in the show notes. But it was definitely a good listen to hear what his process was for that.
Yeah, and that's a good example right there. You could point to Ruben and say, well, he's doing it, I'm going to do it too. But Ruben has a lot of experience and he has a lot of info about his customers and he's done extensive interviews. There's a whole backstory to that that you don't know about. And so if you're at his level and you, not just his level as a marketer and a founder, but his level in terms of knowing your customers, then you should absolutely dive into that. It takes time to get there. You know, with all this, I will point out that I'm definitely considering testing no credit card with Drip and with Hitail, as I've already said. It's not always this blanket recommendation. Like I said, it's not a 90-10 thing. It's really in the middle and it depends on the situation you're in. And I think that's why we wanted to spend a full 30, 40 minutes talking about it today, because the short answer doesn't really give the full picture, you know, I think how I feel about this subject.
One thing that you mentioned to me offline was that in some cases that you felt that some people use not asking for a credit card as a crutch for overcoming bad marketing. Why don't you talk a little bit more about that? Because I thought that was very insightful.
Yeah. I mean, you see some folks just getting started asking for credit card up front and no one's signing up. And then they basically say, well, it must be because I'm asking for credit card. Instead of saying, my marketing's not very good. My messaging isn't very good. My website's not doing a good job of convincing people that this is actually a valuable product, or it really isn't a valuable product, and I didn't test the market in advance. And so it's easy to fall back on not asking for credit card to try to open up the funnel. And I think that's tempting to do. Now, on the flip side, if you do open it up to get more people into that funnel and then figure out why people are getting onboarded and try to figure out who is actually getting value out of it, and you're really going to dive into that, then I can see that being a decent move. But the real beginner folks that I had seen try to do this weren't going to that extent, right? They were just opening up the credit card, hoping that more people would convert. And that was it. And opening up to more to no credit card is the first step of a long series of a lot more work that you need to do to then optimize your positioning and your value prop on your website, upgrade your marketing, update the copy. There's a lot that needs to be learned and done once you do that. It's not just this secret trick that you can use to suddenly, skyrocket your growth.
Yeah, and kind of hidden underneath there is that if you're going to go that route, there's nothing to say that you can't figure out what your marketing message is doing wrong and then go back and start asking for credit cards again up front afterwards. Because, I mean, that's if your goal is to open it up just to get more people in because asking for a credit card up front is not working and you're just trying to get people into the sales funnel to talk to them and kind of understand what it is that their needs really are, and then you tweak your marketing messages and then you revert it back. I mean, I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, but it has to be a deliberate choice to be doing that too. I think that, as you said, people use it as a crutch for bad marketing and then they still don't fix their marketing. They just say, oh, well, this increased my sign-up rate, so I'm going to leave it as is and not do anything. So hopefully that this whole discussion has kind of clarified what our recommendation is and why it is that way, even though it does in many cases go against what this Totango report recommends. But if you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups or by RSS at startupsfortherestofus.com, where you'll also find a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.